Well, as you can see, I put my background as one of the photos. That must have been about 1947, I want to think. It's the only family vacation we ever took. And so we went, I think I sent you a few other photos, the balancing rock and, or the balanced rock, I guess is what they called it. So I don't know if any of this stuff is still there or this is gone, Yeah, I remember, well, we've been back to Colorado. My wife graduated from Colorado State University, so in Fort Collins. So we've been back to Colorado a number of times. And a number of years ago, we were considering leaving California. And we kind of thought, well, where in the world would we go? And we ended up, Colorado would be the only other place we'd like to live because we love the mountains. And we lived in Tahoe for 16 years. And of course, that's right in the mountains. And the winters got to be a little too much. And so we moved down to, we live in north of Sacramento.
Welcome to season 4 of the official podcast of Crossing the Divide, a multimedia exploration of life in the Intermountain West. Crossing the Divide counters a media culture fixated on urbanism and elevates a region defined by open space, sweeping vistas, big skies, and natural wonder. Season 4 brings a new feature, The Daily Direct, spotlighting the important work of local journalism as an antidote to the troubling spread of online disinformation. In this episode, we turn the focus outward to our readership in what we're calling a reader feature, a look at the lives of those who tune into their communities each day by way of the Daily Sentinel. Our first reader feature guest is Keith Vogt. Keith recently reached out to me through our Daily Dose headline newsletter. Though he's never resided in Colorado, he wanted to reconnect with his experiences here in the Valley, working at Fred Harbert's Peach Ranch in the Clifton area. He joins me today to reflect on that time, one of a few highlights in an otherwise difficult childhood. You're my guinea pig today because you're going to be my first, you're my first what I'm calling reader feature for the Daily Direct podcast series. This is going to be a little bit different from our from my other Daily Direct podcast because usually I'm interviewing people who are employed by the Sentinel, but you are not. You come to us by way of being a reader, and I have always wanted to work in documentary film, and I believe that everybody has some kind of story and had thought about just that there must be readers out there who have their own interesting stories, and wouldn't it be kind of interesting to work you all into this series as readers? And had this idea in my head, and lo and behold, you emailed me a couple of weeks ago and told me a little bit about your connection here, which we'll talk about in this episode. And I thought this is the perfect one to start with. And I love that you're so game for it. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. I've been game for a lot of things in my life.
All right.
I enjoy it.
Good, good. Well, we'll get to your connection to Colorado, but you are not from Colorado. Tell me a little bit about your childhood and where you're actually from, where you grew up.
Okay, I grew up in Salina, Kansas, which is just east of you, and spent all of my life until I was 17, and then I joined the Navy and never went back. Yeah. But I had a difficult childhood. I grew up with parents that are a strong German family and spare the rod, save the child, and spoil the child, yeah. I guess. And so not a lot of good memories about childhood. So except my dad, who somehow, I guess it was through his brother, knew of Fred Harbert and the peach orchard. And so I had asthma and hay fever really bad. And during the summertime, during the wheat harvest and the alfalfa harvest, I was a mess. Mm. I just, I could hardly breathe from the asthma. Hay fever was so bad. And so for 2 weeks out of the summertime, why we'd go to Colorado to pick peaches, or I didn't obviously pick them. I was too young, but I helped where I could. And so it was a great 2 weeks. We went out for two summers, as I remember. And then by that time, I got into junior high school and started playing sports and getting involved more. So, but those two summers were really made an impact. And obviously, since I got back in touch with you, remember going to at the end of the day, Fred would load up his truck and we'd take a load of peaches to the rail yard. And this is in the days when they used ice to cool down the rail cars. And so we'd take a load of peaches down in, I think that was in Palisade, where the rail came in. Just a great experience. Got to know people from Nebraska, as well as the locals and so forth. So I was going through a bunch of photos that I'm cleaning out some files and so forth. So I ran onto these again after I'd done my book that I did for my kids when I turned 80. And I thought, well, just check in and see what's happening. So then I went to Grand Junction because we'd been there a couple of times during our trips. Then ran onto the Sentinel website, and then obviously found you, and here we are.
Great. Well, I'm glad that you found us. I'm glad that you reconnected. So was your father in agriculture? I mean, you said that he knew Fred. It was Fred Herbert, correct? He had a peach ranch?
Yes. Well, he knew through my uncle, his brother. His brother went to Texas, went to Michigan, went to Colorado. He had a fruit stand in Hillsboro, which is just an hour away from Salina, where I grew up. And so Frank was his name. Frank encouraged Dad and me to come out. So Dad would take 2 weeks off. He worked. We had an Air Force base in Salina at the time, and he was in civil service. So he'd take 2 weeks off in the summer, and then we'd head out to Colorado. And I could breathe once again, at least for 2 weeks during the summer.
I was going to ask you if there was one particular thing about the place or the landscape or the people that stands out to you. But as you were saying that, I'm thinking it's probably that he could breathe.
Well, it was a health issue to begin with, but the people, obviously I have an impression in my brain about Grand Mesa. You know, you just, once you see that, it stays with you forever. And at the end of the peach harvest, Dad and probably, as I remember, three or four other guys, we'd go up to Grand Mesa and fish. Mm. So that was a great experience as well. So I was a very impressionable 8 and 9 year old kid. So.
Did your dad say anything about the nature of the work? I mean, working in orchards, especially with the heat here, is not an easy task. Was it difficult for him? Or,
well, that's interesting. My memory, of course, we left the heat in Kansas.
Yeah, you had the humidity too.
Oh, yeah. And my memory is that I don't remember Colorado being all that hot. Hmm. This would have been probably latter part of July, August during the peach harvest. It was really hot in Kansas and humid, but I don't remember it being that hot in Colorado. Now, obviously things have changed a lot. I saw that you're going to have about 103 today. Is that right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned, in your email to me that you had specific recollections that maybe once or twice during your time here, you would ride with Fred in his truck as he took the peaches to the rail yard. But you also talked about what you did with the peaches that probably weren't considered good enough for sale.
Oh, I think about that now. It's just amazing. Every night at the end of the day, we'd load up a trailer and I did help with that somewhat as much as I could as a kid. all the culls, because when, I don't know, are there many peach orchards left?
Yes, quite a bit, actually.
Okay. I didn't know if they'd been replaced by vineyards or not, but at the end of the day, we'd load up this trailer, and Fred lived right on the edge of a desert area. So we'd haul like these out onto the desert and just dump peaches all over. I mean, it was almost criminal. But I look back on it now and thinking about all the people that could use them. In fact, there was a couple from Nebraska that came out every year. And she came out especially, there was a little wash house that had a sleeping quarters and also had a stove and so forth. And she'd spend every day canning peaches that we were getting ready to take out. And she'd get another bushel every night. And during the day, then she'd can them. And the same way for us, at the end of the harvest, Dad brought a trailer with us. And so we probably took back, I don't know, 20 bushel maybe. And so for the next week or so, I can still see my mother in the kitchen in the heat of the summertime. You know, in those days, they put them on the stove and the boiling water. Mm. And oh my God, she was just
drenched, I'm sure.
But they were sure nice in January and February.
I bet. Now, were Palisade peaches, yeah, they're very well known now. Were they very well known at the time? Is this something, you know, back in your area in Kansas that, you know, Palisade peaches had a certain type of renown, or not at that point?
Yes, they were, because Colorado is close enough, so they didn't have to ship them back to Pennsylvania or, you know, New York or wherever. So I do remember seeing them in the grocery store, and Dad would bring back, of course, Mom couldn't use all 20, so Dad would take orders for her friends and so forth that the women wanted a couple bushel and so forth. So Colorado peaches were well regarded.
And we didn't really mention what time frame we're talking about here. What time frame is this that this is going on?
Well, this would have been probably 1947, somewhere in that range. I'll be 84 the first of the month. So that's been a couple of years ago, but good memories.
Yeah, it is amazing to me. I just kind of assumed that this was something you did, you know, for many, many years, because you were, you know, your connection to that time here, it really came through in your email that this was a really special time in your life. And I guess I didn't realize that it was, you know, fairly short-lived, really. We're only talking about a couple of weeks.
Well, a couple of weeks each summer, so for two summers in a row, but you know, it doesn't take long when something makes a good impression on you. You know, it was really fun also in the evening time because we didn't have showers and the canals were right close by, obviously, or the water to irrigate the orchards. So we'd go, you know, down a little ways and get into the canal. Of course, this was ice cold water off of the mesa. And we wouldn't stay in very long, but you'd have to get the peach fuzz off because I don't know if you've had experience with peach fuzz or not, but oh my God, it just itches like crazy. So,
you know, my grandmother had an aversion to peaches, actually. And she was, she had to leave school in the eighth grade. This was during the Depression. And she went to work for a family, taking care of their children and doing housework and so forth. You know, and imagine just being in the eighth grade, but she couldn't stand the feel of the fuzzy of peaches. And the woman that she worked for wasn't totally kind to her, let's put it that way. They were obviously a well-off family, and she was not. And she knew that my grandmother hated peeling peaches, so she would set her on peeling peach duty all the time.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. They taste great, but I can imagine if that feel is kind of,
yeah,
that can turn some people off. Or, yeah, I never even thought about it being so itchy. You would get it all over yourself.
Oh, well, because when you were out in the orchard, you know, if you were picking, which I did a little bit of, but then all the peach fuzz would be, I mean, you could look down the aisles of the peach orchard, and you could actually, if the sun was right, you know, you could just see the fuzz coming down. Oh. It was amazing.
Now, were there other kids? Were there other people who traveled too that you got to know, or any other, you know, kids along for the ride that you would hang out with? I mean, how did you spend your time when your dad was picking?
Well, that's interesting. I don't remember. Well, there weren't any kids my age. There were, as I remember, there may have been a couple of teenagers, this family from Nebraska. There were little jobs that I could do around the shed where they were grading the peaches and so forth. I could do liners in baskets and those kinds of things. So Fred always found something for me to do. So I didn't, you know, and I was a pretty good kid, so I wasn't much of a problem.
Well, that's good. That made things much easier. I'm sure you could have gotten into a lot of trouble if you'd put your mind to it.
Oh, I probably could have found something.
Now, you mentioned that you've been back a couple of times to the Grand Junction area. When's the last time you're here? And can you speak to just the changes from what you remember this area was like, the changes that you've noted in that time?
Well, I haven't actually been to Grand Junction. We've been to Fort Collins, to Vail. I'm working on a theater project right now, so we went back to Vail to look at their theater project. But I've been back virtually. I've looked, you know, online to see a lot of the things that are recognizable, and of course Grand Mesa. But physically, have not been back in that area. So,
do you know how long Frank had his peach ranch? I mean, when is the last time that you did you ever have any contact with him after those summers?
Well, he did it for a number of summers. I want to say he probably did it right after the war. So say 45, 46, through probably 10 years, probably the middle 50s. Trying to think. I graduated high school in 55. And then he'd still go to Colorado, but he'd go to Texas for watermelons. He'd go to Michigan for apples. Trying to think where else he might have gone. He was my favorite uncle.
Hmm.
So,
well, you mentioned that you're in Sacramento. What are you doing? What are you doing now? How do you fill your days now?
Well, I've been retired, you know, for 20 years. But as I indicated earlier, we used to live in Tahoe. I don't know if you're familiar with Lake Tahoe or not, but when we were living there, I started a nonprofit group, and we've been working on developing a performing arts center at North Star, which is a ski resort area. Then COVID came along and, you know, everything shut down. So we hope to get re-engaged probably the first of the month. And we're doing a capital campaign at the moment to raise funds to build a theater.
So you're very busy.
Absolutely.
How did you get into the performing arts? How did you get into that?
Well, that's another long story, but I'll make it short. I was involved in high school. We had a very progressive high school as far as theater arts are concerned. And so in my junior and senior year, I was the set designer and did all the sets for our productions. We do Paint Your Wagon, Finian's Rainbow, Brigadoon, Oklahoma, a lot of the old musical shows. So I would paint all the backdrops and sets and so forth. So my senior year, I had planned to go to Pasadena Playhouse to study theater art. But our stage had three trap doors on it because we had our workshop down in the basement. So then we'd take off the coverings and then bring up the flats or set pieces and so forth. So on April the 15th, 1955, I remember it well, some of my classmates took off one of the trap doors and I didn't know it. And a friend of mine and I were striking a set and I was backing up and I fell through the trap door and skull for fracture and brain concussion and a broken back.
Oh.
So that kind of did the end for me as far as my theater at the time. Because then I joined the Navy, because what else does a 17-year-old kid do after that? That's always stayed with me. And as an adult, my wife and I have been involved in community theater throughout the years. So there was just a time that was time for a theater to be built in Lake Tahoe. So that's what we've been spending our time on.
Now, I have to ask you, because you're sitting in front of your backdrop there is an old photo near Balanced Rock, and there's this great old car in the background. And I was sitting there thinking, you're driving from Kansas, and of course now there's so much better road engineering and our cars are much lighter. What was it like to ride through the mountains in one of those old cars?
That's a 1947 Ford. Great car. And I got a funny story for you, because we never ate out when I was a kid. We were very modest. My dad didn't make a lot of money, and that's the reason Mom canned a lot of. She had a victory garden in the backyard, and so she'd can a lot of things during the summertime, which we then were happy to have during the wintertime. So my mom had a sister that lived in Colorado Springs. And so to our great surprise, the folks told us that we're going to take a family vacation. Wonderful. We're going to get to eat out. So we get up early in the morning and start driving west through western Kansas. And we get to Colby, Kansas about noon. So Dad pulls off the highway, and this is when speed limits were like 45, 50 miles an hour. So he pulls off into Colby, and I'm thinking, great, we're going to get to eat lunch. So we passed downtown, passed a number of restaurants, and I said, where are we going? Well, we pull off to a park, and we stop at the park, and I'm saying to my mom and dad, what are we doing? Well, we get out of the car and Dad goes around, opens the trunk, and out comes the basket. Mom had potato salad and chicken fried, you know. So my big disappointment in getting to eat out sometimes. So.
That's funny. You know, I actually have a similar story from my childhood that maybe I'll share with the newsletter audience at some point. And if my mom is listening to this, she knows exactly what story that's going to be. But it's very similar. My mother yeah. also has strong German roots, and okay. the frugality is, you know, runs thick. She also come up with lots of money, so that does change how you approach things in life sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. As I remember, I don't think as a family we ever ate out anywhere. It wasn't until after I was gone and grown, when I went back to Salina to visit the parents, that you know, we ever ate out at a restaurant. So as a kid, then when I went into the Navy, I had a lot of new experiences.
I bet that was quite a change for you.
Absolutely.
Keith, is there anything else you'd like to share with us about your time here in Colorado and your connection to this place?
Well, it just so happened that I can't exactly determine why I went back, but I did go back when I was probably 16, 17, sometime when I was a junior or senior. And I don't remember why, but I went back to see the Herberts. And it just so happened that their daughter's husband's sister, who was much younger, was there. And she was about my age. And we hit it off. I mean, she was beautiful. She was from Bountiful, Utah. So then, you know, I went my way, she went hers. So then when I was first stationed in Pearl Harbor, and then I went to submarine school later, and on my way back from Pearl to go to New London, Connecticut for submarine school, I thought, well, let me see if I can find out if she's, well, she was, and she invited me to come stay and meet her parents and so forth. And which I did, and spent a week. And it just so happened that the four freshmen, and I don't know if you've ever heard of
them. I have heard of
them,
yes.
But a singing group, very close harmony group, they were favorites of mine, happened to be performing. And so we went to see the four freshmen. But another Colorado connection. And so there are just many good things about Colorado that stayed with me all these years.
Well, you have to come back and visit us. You know, we do the Palisade Peach Festival. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but it's kind of a big deal.
No.
Yes.
When is that?
It is in August. It's often around my birthday, which is the 17th. So it's usually like mid-August. So you can come back and
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, you can come back and get a little
great
peach fix. And a Colorado
there
fix.
There you go. That'd be great.
All right, Keith, thank you so much for joining me and for being my guinea pig on this trial run of a reader feature. You are a perfect first guest.
Well, this has been a delight. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
That ends another edition of Crossing the Divide. Thanks for tuning in. As always, you can access our full lineup of conversations with Western Voices by searching Crossing the Divide on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and now on Amazon Music and Audible. Hit subscribe to stay plugged in to each new episode. Follow Crossing the Divide on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to keep up on podcast releases and access exclusive video and photography. To stay up to date on the day's headlines, visit gjsentinel.com and sign up for your Daily Dose newsletter. Crossing the Divide, a voice for the Intermountain West.